All right, welcome back to all our members out there. We are continuing our conversation with David Icke about the Moon Matrix, and we have quite a bit of more details here that we want to try to get to. And David, just you mentioned to me here that you found some of the data and some of the information in regards to the Russian scientists and their detailed information about how the moon basically is a spaceship. Maybe we can begin on that note then and move on from there.
Well, they were looking at the fact that when you look at what the moon is and what it's made of and what's been found there and how it reacts, that it was and is a gigantic spacecraft. And they wrote an article in 1970. They were from the Soviet Academy of Sciences, and the article was headed, "Is the Moon the Creation of Alien Intelligence?" And what they said is that the outer surface of the moon is extremely hard and contains minerals like titanium. Moon rocks have been found to contain processed metals, including brass and mica, and the elements uranium-236 and neptunium-237 that have never been found to occur naturally. Uranium-236 is a long-lived radioactive nuclear waste and is found in spent nuclear fuel and reprocessed uranium. Neptunium-237 is a radioactive metallic element and a byproduct of nuclear reactors and the production of plutonium. Some lunar rocks have been found, they said, to contain 10 times more titanium than titanium-rich rocks on Earth. Titanium is used in supersonic jets, deep diving submarines and spacecraft. Harold Urey, a winner of the Nobel Prize for Chemistry, said about this information, he was terribly puzzled by the rocks from the moon and in particular their titanium content. He said the samples were mind blowers and he could not account for the levels of titanium. Article says by the two scientists this: if a material had to be devised to protect a giant artificial satellite from the unfavorable effects of temperature, from cosmic radiation and meteorite bombardment, the experts would probably have hit upon these precisely what they call refractory metals. In that case, is it not clear why lunar rock is such an extraordinarily poor heat conductor, a fact for which so amazed astronauts? Wasn't that what the designers of this super Sputnik of the Earth were after? From the engineer's point of view, this spaceship of ages long past, which we call the moon, is superbly constructed. If you're going to launch an artificial Sputnik, they said, then it is advisable to make it hollow. At the same time, it would be naive to imagine that anyone capable of such a tremendous space project would be satisfied simply with some kind of giant empty trunk hurled into near-Earth trajectory. It is more likely, they say, that what we have here is a very ancient spaceship, the interior of which was filled with fuel for the engines, materials and appliances for repair work, navigation instruments, observation equipment, and all manner of machinery. In other words, everything necessary to enable this, quote, caravel of the universe to serve as a Noah's Ark of intelligence, perhaps even as the home of a whole civilization envisaging a prolonged thousands of millions of years existence and long wanderings through space, thousands of millions of miles. Naturally, they said, the hull of such a spaceship must be super tough in order to stand up to the blows of meteorites and sharp fluctuations between extreme heat and extreme cold. Probably the shell is a double-layered affair. The base is a dark armoring of about 20 miles in thickness, and outside of it some more loosely packed covering, a thinner layer averaging about 3 miles. In certain areas where the lunar, quote, seas and craters are, the upper layer is quite thin, in some cases non-existent. And so that's where they were coming from in 1970. And all these years later, I'm absolutely sure that they were on the right lines. Their themes were correct.
Huh. How about that? And there's one story that came up about a year, 2 years ago, about a lot of the rocks that were here on Earth that actually have been, you know, lost or disappeared, or, you know, the rocks that they brought back from the moon. And I wonder if that has possibly something to do. I don't know if there's a conspiracy angle here in terms of the fact that they want to try to hide the real rocks, because some of these, you know, people can do studies on them and find the composition of them and find these anomalies with them. I don't know if that really, you know, kind of means anything in the larger scope of things, but it kind of goes hand in hand, David, with a lot of the stuff about the tapes disappearing, so they say anyway, from the Apollo moon landings and things like that, meaning that they're trying to kind of cover up the things that they did that. But all of this stems back to this idea of why haven't NASA officially, in a way, been back to the moon? What is going on there?
Well, there's a lot of evidence of over many, many centuries of strange lights on the moon, of UFO activity around the moon, and of course all these other non-natural things that are on the moon, like the towers and what have you. And so the evidence is absolutely there, even in the public arena, if you look at it,
yep,
that something very strange is going on there. And of course, NASA, with their insider knowledge of things they don't let us see, they might not know the full story, but because it's very compartmentalized, but from what they don't let us see, they know more than the public do. They must be totally aware of the fact that the moon is not what we're being told it is. And I wonder, you know, Henrik, just how many of these moons exist. You know, I mean, it's no accident that you had the theme of the Death Star moon in Star Wars, which was, of course, produced by an insider, George Lucas, who, you know, I don't think was telling a story of a galaxy far, far away in theme at all. Hmm. And it's interesting, too, you know, when you look at the Saturn moon Mimas and you look at the Death Star, I mean, it's ridiculous. They're just mirrors of each other. I mean, if you just anyone wants to go into Netfind and put Mimoth and Death Star, Mimoth, M-I-M-A-S, and Death Star in an image find, and you'll see them put together side by side. And also, there has been talk recently about whether one of the moons of Mars, Phobos, is actually a spacecraft.
That's right.
And there was a guy in 1963, chief of applied mathematics at NASA, called Raymond H. Wilson, who said, quote, Phobos might be a colossal base orbiting Mars. That was in 1963. And just before, when would it be? Just a few weeks ago, on The Sky at Night, which is the longest running astronomy program in the world, it's on the BBC, they were talking about the findings of the European Mars Express spacecraft, which took some very close pictures of Phobos. And as one of the people in the studio being interviewed said, that the findings show that Phobos is lighter than it should be, could be hollow, and its composition is not like any asteroids or meteorites that we know of. And I just wonder, you know, how many things out there are not what they seem to be?
Mm-hmm.
Because if we think about it, if you are wanting to manipulate and people not realizing you're manipulating, then it's no good turning up and parking a bloody great spaceship that looks like a flying saucer or something.
That's right.
You know, where people can see it. You know, it's much better if you, what did soldiers do? They look for camouflage. Why? Because they don't want to be found. They want to be seen. And I sometimes look at Saturn. I look at its moons, and I wonder really if I'm looking at a car park. It's rather strange that Saturn is the one that I'm being drawn to, and this flow of kind of, if you like, information synchronicity is pushing me more and more towards all the time. And that's the one that's got all these blooming moons. And moons, one of its moons, for instance, like Iapetus, I mean, with that great bloody ridge that's so long and so high, they call it the walnut. I mean, you know, that's got, and of course, one side of that is one color, dark, and the other side is white. And that's not reflection. That's the way it's made, and it's like that doesn't look natural to me.
Mm-hmm.
In the way that it's just appeared being, you know, evolved in the course of millions of years. And again, to really go in the direction we need to go, we have to suspend our sense of limitation. We have to suspend our belief, not that we believe anything just because it's there, but we suspend our belief where our belief is a sensor of us looking at something dispassionately. I mean, a few years ago, they found this enormous, NASA announced they'd found this enormous ring around Saturn, millions of miles out, that's so big that I think, some fantastic number of Earths would fit into this ring. Some astonishingly great number of Earths would fit into this ring. And suddenly they found a new ring around Saturn, massive, millions of miles out. What else is there to find that connects it? Because I see, when I look at Saturn, Henrik, I see a massive broadcasting system.
Right.
That's what I see.
Right.
And they say that, you know, the rings are full of ice and all that stuff. Well, what if that ice was crystal?
Hmm.
I mean, you know...
It's a receiver then, actually, in one sense. I mean, it looks like a satellite receiver, yeah.
Receiver transmitter. And I'm sure that what the moon is doing is almost like a subordinate to what Saturn is doing. And then, you know, it's no accident, mate, that they named that planet Saturn, you know, after the Roman god Saturn, and who's, of course, Kronos in Greece, and the same figure under another name is found in Babylon, is found in Asia. I mean, they don't name these blooming planets by accident. If they want to attach to it something, then they'll give it the name that attaches that.
Mm-hmm.
And to attach that, because, of course, you know, our period of Christmas was the period of Saturnalia in Rome, where they worshipped the god Saturn. And I just wonder whether I'm sure it will lead this way, that the worship of the god Saturn was actually the worship of this planet, because we don't know what's gone before in terms of the information and knowledge that was available to the inner elite in places like Rome, who were setting the people up to worship, give their energy to these various gods. But who were these gods? And I'm sure that the worship of Saturn and then naming the planet Saturn is absolutely not an accident. They're connected, because all the way through history, there's been the mass of the people with one level of awareness and another inner core with a very greater, more massively more advanced level of awareness, because they are connect out into this whole non-human group that is feeding them that information, because they are the representatives within this reality on this planet, if you like, of that non-human group. It takes a reptilian form, I would say, in its higher control structure anyway. And I'm sure that we're going to find that things like that the reptilians and greys are in the moon. And I wonder, you know, Henrik, how many people who've said they've been abducted and found themselves in a spaceship, why couldn't they have been on the inside of the moon?
Absolutely. Well, why not? It actually has been a few number really, really strange accounts that I've heard. Remember, this is years ago, about people who allegedly were taken to the backside, the far side of the moon, the backside of the moon.
Right.
And in certain cases, very, very weird statements were involved, like, would you like to meet Lucifer? You know, he's on the backside of the moon, kind of thing. You know, it's like, and these were like small kids who were told these stories by, you know, Grace and whatnot.
Well, I think the immediate control structure, because I think Saturn represents a greater control structure. I think that the Earth has a real history with Saturn going way back, because I know some people that are researching and communicating this whole electric universe area.
David Talbot, Wallace Thornhill, they've done tremendous work on the mythology of Saturn, that it might even actually been closer to Earth at one time as well.
That's the point I was going to make. And I think they're right. I think that in many ways, Saturn was almost like an alternative sun. And you know, Saturn, the Dark Lord. What is the astrological thing about Saturn? It's law and it's limitation and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, again, you know, we're throwing little bits of information here, little bits of dots around, but this is going to come together, and we're going to see how these dots connect, because you know, like I said, in the first hour. What I was told 21 years ago was all that has been kept from us was going to be brought to the surface. Well, we ain't got here and it stops. It's going to go on and on and on. And for us to go with it and get the benefits of that awareness, we have to suspend belief and our sense of limitation and our preconceived ideas, because we are going to be asked, challenged. I'm up for it, me, big time. To go into some areas that are absolutely extraordinary compared with what we thought the world was like and the forces that were in control of it. And Saturn's going to be a big key in this understanding.
Now, do you think that Saturn, maybe even in combination with the moon, might have something to do it has, as you've been detailing already, obviously something to do with the human experience, but I'm thinking even one step further, talking about maybe life, time limitation in terms of longevity, things like that. If we think about the symbolism of Saturn again, it's you know, the black robed Cronus, it's the judge, the lord of
exactly,
it's death pretty much, right? He has a scythe with him, and he even sometimes the symbol is the hourglass, meaning he's the lord of time, lord of the rings, right? So could that be it? Could it be connected?
I think all that. As these dots are put together, I think all that is going to come into it. Absolutely, our sense of time. I mean, even you know, look at what the moon does to our sense of time, because of its effect on the Earth. It's affecting our relationship to time. If it was a satellite of Saturn, as I'm increasingly sure it is in some form, then that would also connect into the manipulation of time. And the manipulation of time is a fantastic, also our sense of time, because there is no time. But I mean, you get a ludicrous situation where you cross an invisible line in the ocean and you go into tomorrow, or you go the other way and you go into
right.
yesterday.
Right.
And this is incredible. Our sense, the way our time's been constructed is ludicrous. But and it's just another prison that we're kept in. I mean, look at how time dominates our lives. Is that the time? Oh my God! I must rush. Oh, is that the time? Oh, there's no time. Not enough time in the day. Oh, what time? Yeah. What's the time? Mm. All the time. This is going on, and it is helping to impact upon our sense of reality and our flow of events. When we look at what we call time, it's merely decoding software in a sense. I mean, when you're in a dentist and you don't like the dentist and you're sitting in the waiting room, time can seem to pass very slowly.
Or
in the dentist chair, even slower.
Yeah.
But as Einstein said, if you're in the company of a beautiful woman, time can pass very quickly. Why? Because our brains are taking sequences or taking events and decoding them into a sequence. Particularly the left side of the brain does that. And the quicker it makes that sequence move, the quicker time in our experience appears to move. The slower the sequence happens, the quicker the slower time seems to pass. And what is impacting upon that sequence time speed is our own sense of mental and emotional state, which is impacting on the decoding way it's decoded. And so we're locked into this illusion of time, which is in many ways totally impacting upon our age or our aging process, because we observe people going through a sequence. And it's a very short sequence compared with what it used to be before these guys hijacked the show. Mm. And we see people go through a sequence of what the Bible calls 70 years and 10. And if we open our minds to it and let more stuff in, then we are going to have some of these detailed questions answered. But at the moment, yeah, I'm open. It's on the back burner. Is it a planetoid hollowed out? Is it a total construct? I wouldn't be dogmatic and say one or the other yet. But that knowledge will come. What I do think also, though, Henrik, is this genetic manipulation. I think a lot of it was done in the moon, and from genetically modifying the human genetics and all that stuff. Mm. And it was interesting for me when Credo Mutwa was talking about Wawani and Mpanku and the way that they came in the moon and all that stuff from the Zulu perspective anyway, and that they were leaders of the Chitahuri, and they were known as the Water Brothers. Now, of course, the Sumerian stories of the Anunnaki say the Anunnaki were led by two brothers, Enlil and Enki. And certainly Enki was given symbolism to do with water. And so it's interesting to me that that theme you find in the Middle East there, right at the north of Africa, and it's also the same theme is being told using different names.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In southern Africa. I think there's so many of these areas which are at the moment are still dots. That's interesting. We're going to see how they connect into a coherent story. I also think that the schism I talk about, which created devastation on Earth, was part of a much greater incredible series of events in the heavens, where the planets went walkabout. And when you look at this perspective from the electric universe way of looking at things, which I think is absolutely right, then when certain forces change, electromagnetic forces, electrical forces, then planets could go walkabout.
Yeah.
Because suddenly the what they've locked into in terms of their stability and their orbit suddenly gone. And suddenly they're off. And
look at Tom Van Flandern's detail about the exploding planet hypothesis as well. We have this belt, obviously, of where a planet should be, as it were, in comparison to the ratio of the other planets in our solar system. So something might have happened there as well, connecting with these things, David.
I'm sure that was part of it. And wherever you go around the world, like again with Credo Mutwa and the Zulu legends in South Africa, they say there was a planet there. Mm. There was a planet. Was it between Mars and Jupiter? And this we're starting now to get the sort of information and more open minds to process that information that are pointing some very, very common themes. I mean, Velikovsky,
right?
Manuel Velikovsky didn't have every detail right, but my goodness me, I think his theme was spot on, and it when he did was absolutely a round of applause. But now we're being able to add to that with more detail. But even then, there's so much more to know, but we're going in a direction that's very clear.
Absolutely. And it's amazing. In most cases, it seems like some of these, old guys that were doing the research in the early days, like Velikovsky, were also kind of tapping into something. They were just more on the trail of an intuition-based knowledge trail, if you will, in that sense, because it certainly is incredible. Now it's like evidence, the physical evidence is being added more and more and more to their kind of work. But another detail here I want to ask you a little bit about, David, is obviously the electromagnetic influence, as you mentioned before. We have blood in the human system, hemoglobin being rich in iron. There is a connection with magnetism right there. We have the menstruation cycle, obviously, of women connected with the moon cycle as well. Water and even salt, I think you detail actually, as well as an electro, conductor, if you will, in the human body. Let's talk a little bit about some of these themes and how you know, influential you think the moon is on you know, every single little, detail in terms of our lives, David. I mean, it's there all the time. It's affecting us all the time. We have obviously more increase when we have a full moon, etc. Yeah. But blood, salt, water, everything affects it, right?
Yeah, it must do. It also has an effect on the endocrine system and human hormonal activity. And of course, part, this is one of the things I go to in the book, part of the endocrine system of glands is the pineal gland and the pituitary gland, which kind of work inside the brain as part of this third eye, this sixth sense. And if you shut that down, then people do not have exactly what we've been discussing in the last couple of hours. They do not have the same sensitivity to get beyond the five senses. Neither is it an accident, because all these things, all these dots connect in the end. No matter how unconnected they may appear, it's no accident that fluoride that they put in the water calcifies the pineal gland. Mm. It's all connected in keeping us in this frequency prison, which is what it is. Mm. And, you know, in the They Live movie, like I said earlier, where eventually the broadcast transmission is stopped and suddenly people are seeing people next to them are not human and they're seeing all these subliminal things they couldn't see before. When this frequency fence, this moon matrix is switched off, we are going to be staggered at what is there to be seen that we can't see, and what we are seeing that is nothing more than a manufactured illusion. You see, when you are at a hypnotist stage show, and he's making someone think that someone's naked in the audience, or there's an elephant in the audience, or suddenly there's a terrible smell under their nose when there's nothing there, or they eat a potato but think it's an apple.
Right.
What is happening? The hypnotist is hacking into the decoding system of the stooge, so that when information comes to the five senses, whether it's the taste of an apple or the smell or whatever, it is sent to the brain as electrical information. And then the brain decodes it, different part of the brain for different senses decodes it, and then we smell, and then we see, and then we taste. Now, if a hypnotist can do that in a stage show and manipulate the way someone decodes and therefore experiences reality, then imagine what could be done if broadcast frequencies were being sent from technology and technological awareness beyond our understanding, that we were actually picking up and decoding. Blocking frequencies that we decode as things we experience when we're not actually bloody there. All this becomes possible. And the more, Henrik, that I go down this road, and I'm going down it faster and faster, the pieces are starting to come very, very quickly at the moment. Mm. And it's, we are going to see that the Matrix movie version of the manipulated reality is very, very close to what we are experiencing.
Hmm.
There's much more of the universe that we're not decoding and therefore seeing, experiencing. And also, there's so much information we are decoding that's actually just there to manipulate our sense of perception. And you know, I wonder this. There's the symbolism in They Live of, because of this broadcast frequency, they couldn't see that a significant number of people that look human weren't human.
Mm.
Well, I just wonder if the reason that we don't see these so much activity involving these, I would say, reptilians and greys and all that stuff, is because the moon matrix is blocking our ability to decode within the frequencies that they operate in. And once upon a time, we could do that before the genetic manipulation, the firewalling off. And therefore, it's almost the perfect kind of crime, if you like, where you control the lives of now billions of people. You turn them into your slaves, not least because, you know, the moon needs servicing in terms of resources, right? So that's there's resources going from the Earth to the moon all the time. I'm sure of it because, you know, they need that. And there's so much activity going on outside of our ability to decode it. And I think that long ago, before the genetic manipulation, humans could decode it and they could see these people. Maybe some of the ancient accounts are based on the fact that they could be seen there. The gods lived among them. But nowadays, we're not decoding that frequency range, so we don't see them. I mean, you know, I know people who are really feet on the ground people, really grounded people who have experienced, one of them in France, of something coming in the form of just a bright light going incredibly fast and went straight into the earth, straight through the into the earth. Why? Because it wasn't on the same frequency. It could go in to the earth because it was not in that frequency range. And he's convinced it was, and in fact, someone who was giving him information at the time confirmed it to him. These were ships, because they have the ability to, we call them ships. They are vehicles for travel, if you like, because they have the ability to move in a certain frequency and then move into this one. So they can go into the earth, and I'm sure we know there are non-human and human, non-human interactive bases within the earth. They can enter the earth in an energy form without having to actually come as what we call a UFO or a ship.
Right, yeah.
And in this way, there is, I'm sure, enormous interaction, which we don't know about, between the earth, earth bases, and the moon. And, you know, when you look at the number of sightings that there have been on the moon of strange activities and UFOs and strange lights and stuff, we are talking about, we ain't talking about, you know, 25 people. We're talking about very significantly large numbers of people, nothing like the 7 billion humans, but still a significant number of people. And that civilization, which I say is going on in the moon, it has to it has to have the resources it needs. It has to do all the things that it needs to do, and it needs to get the resources for it from elsewhere. I wonder if this whole thing about gold is not something that is required in the moon.
That's right. I mean, obviously, there's so much gold that have been taken from the planet, been taken from the reserves that we thought we had, you know, even under the freaking World Trade Center towers, there was a huge amount of gold just disappeared, you know, on that day.
And Henrik, who has been the prime family behind gold?
The Rothschilds. Yeah.
And the Rothschilds are as powerful as they are because they are very, very close and interact with this non-human race. In fact, they probably are this non-human race in human form. And so, yes, I talk about that in theme and just asking questions in Human Race Get Off Your Knees. what's this thing about gold, the Anunnaki and gold?
Yeah.
And then you've got the Rothschilds controlling gold. Then you've got all this gold going missing. And these stories, some of which have made one or two mainstream sources here and there, where they've found that actually these apparently gold bars are actually tungsten with
right.
a coating of gold.
That's right,
right.
The fake so gold bars. That's incredible.
Once again, mate, we're picking up these different bits of information like in regard to this subject now, but the information's going to come where we're going to connect the dots, and these dots are going to connect into the moon. They're going to connect into all these other things, that all these other subject areas that are part of the same massive tapestry of manipulation and exploitation.
Yeah. We might be looking at then, David, a kind of a co-joint, if you will, off-world, you know, colony, if you will, on the moon, maybe partially human and partially alien or reptilian, whatever you want to call it. But that gives some credence to this idea about that there is a secret space, you know, program going as well, and the fact that, I mean, NASA even have an official secret shuttle going somewhere, doing some kind of missions, the X-37B. It's been spotted by amateur astronomers several times now. We don't know. That could be going to the moon for all we know.
Yeah, and they've got technology way beyond the shuttle.
Right, of course.
When they say they went to the moon for the first time in 69, I'm not sure that the true story has been told about that. But certainly they've been going to the moon for a long time in much more advanced technology. I mean, that's all in many ways part of the smokescreen. It's part of the, look, this is the limitation. This is the cutting edge of your technological potential, right? Mm-hmm. Well, they're flying around in things way beyond that. And are they even having to fly around? You know, I'm picked up stories over the years of what you might call beam me up Scotty technology, where they're moving people off planet to bases elsewhere. One talked about a base on Mars that he claims to have visited. Well, we don't know that he says that, but he certainly was describing that the way it was done was along the lines of actually demanifesting and then remanifesting. And, you know, this is why we have to open our minds, not to accept it just because someone says it, of course not, but we have to open our minds to the fact that things are going on around us that are far in advance of anything we think is possible. And we're going to, like I said right at the start of this chat, mate, we're going to have some real shocks and surprises in terms of, you know, people that haven't researched this, enormous shocks and surprises when they realize what's been going on. Because it's coming out. It's coming out. It's meant to come out. It's part of this transformation. They can't keep the lid on it. Not indefinitely. They can't. And when you think, as we were saying earlier, what we know now that we didn't know 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, what are we going to know 5 years from now?
Mm-hmm,
and,
that's right.
And it's in this period, of five years and then on some, that some major, major shocks in many areas, experiences, challenges, and also, oh my God, so that's what's been going on. And it's going to be an amazing time.
Absolutely, and it's accelerating all the time, not only the gathering of the information, but, you know, the way it can be accessed as well. But we're going to begin to wrap things up, David, for this time, but I want to ask you a little bit about this, and this is kind of one of the tricky questions, again, in terms of you're not in a position to know, but I want to ask you about your intuitive, you know, feeling about this. The they live style, you know, hypnosis that is being beamed, if you will, at us that you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
Do you think that this will go off, if you will, because it is going to be turned off, or is there something in us that is going to change, allowing us to bypass this frequency? What do you think, David?
I personally think both. In the shorter term, it's probably our challenge to expand our awareness beyond its influence. You're still going to be influenced to an extent, but nothing like before. And what happens is it's like being in a fog, and then sticking your head above the fog. Suddenly you can see what's beyond it. But humans basically are living in a fog of bewilderment caused by this. Interestingly, three or four weeks ago, I came across this quote by Gurdjieff, you know, the mystic, very well known. And this is what he's supposed to have said in 1916. All movements, actions, and manifestations of people, animals, and plants depend upon the moon and are controlled by the moon. The mechanical part of our life depends upon the moon. It is subject to the moon. If we develop in ourselves consciousness and will and subject our mechanical life and all mechanical manifestations to them, we shall escape the power of the moon. That is basically what I'm saying here and what was saying earlier. We can expand our consciousness so we're accessing levels of awareness, perception, and observation that are beyond the moon matrix, at which point we can see through it. So that's one way. But I do strongly feel that, you know, in this multi-leveled thing that's going on, the nice and not so nice, that what is coming from the moon is going to change. And it's going to change in line with this whole transformation that we're going through from the period of suppression, control, imposition, and enslavement, which is what? Mental enslavement, which becomes physical enslavement because we enslave ourselves. And we're moving into a period of expanded consciousness. And, you know, some younger people around today are going to live in such a different world to the one that they were born into because of the level of knowledge potential that is going to be released and the way the control and manipulation of our perception is going to be removed. And, you know, this is also an interesting point, which I stress in my books and talks that, you know, just over two decades ago, I was told about these truth vibrations were coming, and I was told what their impact was going to be. It has been exactly what I was told it was going to be. Now, if I can know that, or be told that 21 years ago, then how the hell long has this control system or that was controlling in the background, nothing as blatant as it is now, how long has it known? How long has this non-human element known that this vibrational change was coming? It is no accident whatsoever, Henrik, that we are facing the kitchen sink and the plug being thrown at us now by this control system on every level, from food additives to electromagnetic pollution to radiation, all of it, yeah. And all the other things in our lives, economic and what have you, to pull us into a state of density and fear. It's no accident that this is happening now on the scale it is, just at the time that this vibrational change is waking up more and more and more people. In many ways, this is a defense operation going on by the control system to hold on to the power it has always had behind the scenes. Yeah. You see, if you want to have people working for you and not challenge you, then stay in the background. Don't make it too obvious. And you're scamming them and you're exploiting them, but not to the extent where people are going to go, hold on a second, it's becoming obvious what's going on here. So that's what they would, I'm sure, have wanted to do. Just carry on in the background, and humanity was staying asleep, so that's not a problem, and we'll just go on unchallenged. But because they knew this vibrational change was coming, if I could have known 21 years ago, like I said, how long are they bloody known? Then you're gonna target that period. You're gonna throw all your cards at that period because you want to, or you know that what's worked up to this point, and humanity has just snoozed along 70 years and 10 and often a lot less. Suddenly, that's not enough anymore. And when you think what they're throwing at us in terms of destabilizing the body electrochemically, through all this stuff and all the other things that are going on, and still people are waking up and waking up in ever greater numbers, then you can see what they're dealing with.
It's almost like some people are waking up because of the thing that are, because so many things are being thrown at them as well. It's like what, and that's what's so interesting about the situation. It's like no matter what, how much they try to, you know, keep the lid on humanity in that sense, whatever they do, whatever move they're trying to make at this, you know, crucial time, it is going to lead to, you know, a mass awakening, hopefully, you know, anyway, no matter what they do.
Yeah, well, this is the point, really, because I said years ago, long time ago, when hardly anyone was listening to this stuff, that there was going to come a point where they would have to break the surface, because you can play the hidden manipulation up to a point, but if you want to impose something upon the world, then at some point you have to break the surface. And start putting it in place in a way that people can see it. Mm. Now we're clearly in that period now, and it's this really crucial period now where, in effect, the dragon has put its head above the trench and said, "I'm here." And people who are in denial years before are now starting to say, well, hold on a second. It looks as if it might be happening. Mm. Well, it is happening. And so, again, that is the way that even the five senses of just observing the world that's there to be seen can see that actually this conspiracy is no kind of theory. It's actually happening. So yes, that's all. Also, I mean, so many people have turned to my information over the last few years because of what I wrote years before.
Yeah.
And that's what I say to people. You know, just speak your truth, because if it has any validity, it will eventually be shown to be so. But if you don't speak your truth, it can't have validity down the road, because you haven't spoken it.
Right.
And it's important that we just put aside the fear of what other people think or what people say about us or all the rest of it, because we're speaking our truth. That's what we're here to do. And what's happening, because I have this thing, you can't unhear something. It's a very, very powerful fact, that. And if you speak it, like when I did years ago and got enormous ridicule, well, that's what you do when you do that sort of thing. But if I hadn't, people would not be looking at my information now as they are.
True.
Because yeah. why would they? But it gives you the credibility of actually saying that this is going to happen, and it happens. And that's only because you put aside fear of the consequences of what will people think about me, and this is my truth. If it doesn't have validity, well, it won't be shown to be so. But if it does, then down the line, you'll be glad that you spoke your truth then, despite all the consequences and ridicule for doing so.
That's right. It's going to surface eventually anyway, and you can't hold that down. That's what I believe as well. I feel that there's a force behind you know, things moving in the right direction. Maybe
definitely,
you know, the force of truth or you know, whatever it is, it's a positive thing that is on our side, if you will, in that sense, and it wants to be known, it wants to be recognized in the world for truth, because again, there's been too much cover up and going on for such an extended period of time. And you know, people can have a different approach to this, that certain things that have happened for a reason, for the human experience, et cetera, et cetera. But I believe, you know, just as you, David, that the time is right, you know, for these shackles to be, you know, thrown off right now, and for things
yes.
really to be starting to open up. And that's exciting, if nothing else, in these dire times as it is. That's a positive thing that people should, I think, focus on as well.
Yes, and there's another point here, because you can look at the same thing and see it from a different angle, and none of the angles are wrong. It's just the point from which you are experiencing it. So it's not paradoxical. It's the fact that when you observe something from here, it looks like this, and it is. But when you observe it from here, it looks like this, and it is. And, you know, when we go through a transformation of perception, consciousness, and I can speak from my own experiences. I had an extreme one. What happens is that we are generating a magnetic field all the time, and the vibrational state of that magnetic field is dictated by our mental, emotional, and what you might call spiritual higher awareness state. And that magnetic field is pulling towards it other magnetic fields that sync with what we're putting out. These are people, places, ways of life, jobs, relationships, all of it. And when we go through a spiritual transformation or a consciousness transformation, clearly that impacts itself upon the magnetic field we're projecting. Thus, it starts disconnecting from what the old field was connecting to, the old state of being, but the new one is not. So people, locations, relationships, opportunities, all this stuff, jobs tend to change. The more powerful the change, the more blatantly they change. And what is experienced then is, and I experience this, is that your life seems to fall apart in that process. But it's not falling apart. What you're experiencing as that is actually the transformation between what the old you was drawing in and what the emerging new you was drawing in. And if the old, and people say, oh, my life's falling apart. And you say, well, hold on a second. That's the life you didn't want. That's the life you wanted to change, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. But because we find solace in security, things not changing. We've got to kind of get over that one in the period we're in.
Big time.
Where I'm going with this is that if the old them continued to, or the new them continued to pull in the old things, then nothing changes. And the old them has to go. Life's falling apart, mate. So the new one can emerge. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder, Henry, I'm sure this is the case, that if we go to a much, much higher level of observing this whole situation we're in, whether what we're actually experiencing collectively is the old collective self falling apart.
Right. Yep. Yep.
Because if you take it just on the physical level, while the present banking system, political system, military system, and all these other systems stay in place, nothing's going to change, because their job is to stop it changing in terms of freedom and the expansion of human awareness. They've got to go. And this is another reason why, although it might not seem it for a few years yet, it's another reason why this control system's doomed. It's doomed for a number of reasons. It's doomed because it thinks it's in control when it's not. It might, you know, I use an image in my talks where I put humans collectively in a box, and next to it I put a reptilian face on a bigger box, but it's still a box. And the way that they have manipulated humanity is simply to put us in a smaller box than they're in, but they're still in a box. And because they are of a certain mental and emotional state, i.e. they want control over, which is always a massively extreme expression of insecurity and fear, they can only get so far in terms of what they can access. This is why they're very much intellectual based rather than spiritually based. But from the levels of awareness that are in the end involved in this transformation we're experiencing, this control system is a fly on an elephant's back. It really is. It's just the point at which you observe it. And this information construct on which this control system is built, this information construct that we've been experiencing through this last period of control and suppression, it is being phased out as the new one takes over at a much higher level, much more advanced level of perception, awareness, everything. So its vibrational information foundation is actually moving under its feet.
Yep.
It's crumbling, and it is like a cornered rat at the moment. It is throwing everything it can at us, and it might strut around in its arrogance, which is its version of whistling in the dark, but actually, it's terrified. It's terrified of humans waking up, and it's terrified of what's coming.
And you can see that. I mean, you're right, David. The response that the system, if you will, have, if we look at it as kind of an organic entity almost, the control system is trying to get bigger. It's centralizing itself. It's like bulking up because it knows that something is wrong, something is happening. And the more it does that, that goes against. It shows that the mentality of the people who are involved in it also is of a different time and a different era. When I believe that things that are going to last is when you go in the opposite direction. You think more locally. You're making smaller cells, small pockets. You know, that's like even a military strategy, if you will, in that sense. And you have, if you have a big, you know, castle that everybody's can looking at it as a big centralized, you know, organization, then that is going to be where all the focus and attention is going to be aimed at. So there again, the response is in the total opposite. It's against the stream and the flow of the new things that are coming in. That's how I view it anyway, David.
Yeah, I also feel, intuitively, you know, you feel energy that they are pushing this along as fast as they can in their panic. And of course, the more you do that, the more blatant what you do becomes, and the more mistakes you make, and the more ludicrous become your excuses to justify your actions, because you haven't got time to work up a good story anymore. So we'll just come out with any story. That's what we're seeing in the Middle East now. I mean, this stuff about protecting civilians, it's such obvious garbage. It's unbelievable.
Yep.
But really, they haven't got time to construct a good story now. It's like, just say whatever we need to say and do it anyway. and that, of course, exposes the game more and more. You know? But it really is, you know, we're facing the cornered rat, and it's not going to go quietly, but it is going to go.
That is absolutely correct. Many more things, I think, will open up as a consequence to this as well. And hopefully when the transformation of consciousness happens and more people get ideas and come into this state, how is it that I didn't see this before? Hand in hand with that, David, I also feel that people will be potentially even on the cusp of inventing things, maybe free energy. People, you know, on various spots around the earth at you know, similar times, if you will, are also going on a different road, you know, where we might invent, you know, free energy to get off the centralized grids that are out there, another level of control. But that's a whole different topic. But it's an exciting time.
Henrik, one of the things I've picked up over the years from an out there sources, if you like, is that what seem to be incredible problems on Earth, not least environmental problems and all this stuff, they're not really the problem we think they are, because we're only looking at it from the level of potential that we think is the cutting edge.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
If you know, when this new reality comes in, when the blinkers come off and the headphones come off from the moon matrix, and I'm absolutely sure this is going to happen eventually, we are going to be visited by, or let's say, benevolent non-humans are actually going to make themselves known to us.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, you know, there's a lot of manipulation going to be potentially within government and fake landings and all that stuff. But
sure.
I mean, I'm sure there's going to be genuine arrivals at some point, which will have the knowledge to right these wrongs, and we're going to start interacting with other civilizations that are not of this planet, because that's what it was like eons ago, before this hijack took place, and we were put in our prison cell. We can't see the bars. You know, it's dawning on me more and more and more profoundly the extraordinary level of difference between where we are and what is possible. I mean, it's just almost beyond belief what is possible compared with what we think is possible. And so a massive, massive, insolvable problem becomes a press of a button symbolically when you move into the level of awareness of what is really possible and how it really works.
Absolutely. It's It's really interesting, David. And again, as you said, we have a lot of the dots here that we are connecting, and more information is coming to the surface all the time. And obviously, one of the things, if people are new to your work, is to take a look at the, at your latest book, David, Human Race, Get Off Your Knees, and Ain't That About Time, by the way. DavidIke.com is your website, and there's so much there as well for people. Articles, news, so you have a newsletter, DVDs, videos, and books, a ton of material. And then I want to encourage people to go see David live as well. It's a blast, and much more of these dots that we've been alluding to here in this program are laid out in greater detail by David as well. And he's coming to Bavaria, Rome, Copenhagen, and then Stockholm. And then I guess you're continuing your tour as well from that point.